Give your word. Spread the word. Mark my words. Love the words. On East Leeds Community Radio.
Nothing compares to its song.
So you're listening to Love the Words here on East Leeds Community Radio from Studio One at Chapel FM Art Centre. And this afternoon, I'm really pleased to have in the studio a poet, but also much more than that, a GP and an expert on herbal medicine, along with Barry Strickland Hodge. She's made some fantastic programmes for us for various writing on airs. Emma Storr.
Thank you. I'm not an expert on herbal remedies. That's definitely Barry. But what I like doing is exploring it with him. And he's really the expert.
Well, you do a very good job, Emma, of drawing Barry out, because he is a man of great enthusiasms, but also knowledge. So I hope you do some more programmes for us.
Yes, we're planning to do at least a couple on women's health. So that'll be forthcoming. I shall run it by you very soon.
Bear in mind that the theme of writing on air this year is recovery.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. So. Okay. I read a very, very good book on recovery by Gavin Francis.
Okay.
Who's written a sort of history of convalescence and convalescent homes, and how we don't have that concept anymore, and that the way modern medicine has gone, we don't give time for people to recover from surgery, from serious illness, from even minor illness. It's such an insult to the body that you need recovery time.
Well, thank you very much. That's already very exciting. And there's plenty to talk about. But yeah, you must give me the title of that again.
I will.
Well, Emma, it's we're going to be talking about your books and your work rather than other people's. And it's focusing on your poetry. Mm. And you've got a really lovely collection of poetry that's just come out, The Year of Two Winters.
Yes.
And you're going to be reading some poems from that, but also talking about your kind of, your background as a poet, and the journey that you've made to be here. And also talking about your mother, Catherine Storr, who was a writer for young people, for children and young people. I've got one of her books here in my hand called Marianne Dreams, which I've read. It's really, really interesting. So we're going to be talking about her, perhaps, and her influence on you in whatever way that was. But first of all, could you read us a poem?
Yes, well, I thought because we're talking about Catherine later, I might read a poem which featured her.
Ah.
So as a child, we went on holiday every year to Cornwall because we were lucky enough to have a cottage in Constantine Bay. Mm. And so this one is about being a child in Cornwall and the fact that I loved going there. I couldn't understand why my parents wanted to live in London and not Cornwall. And one of the joys was never having a bath, which you'll find out about. Constantine, Cornwall. Mother is knitting a saga, an Aran jumper in bleached wool. It takes 7 years while she reads aloud from old Peter's Russian tales. The attic is in the sky of our house. She disappears for slow-ticked hours, can't be disturbed until we have lunch. I grab forbidden tongs by the fire. Their jaws are clamped like mine. I wait to hear the trapdoor creak, her canvas shoe. She comes down backwards, counting treads on the metal ladder's narrow steps. I pluck a tune on the egg slicer's wires while Mother pours a glass of sherry. She makes cheese sandwiches, fries them in a battered pan, my favourite meal. Later we walk on a glittering road down to the beach. I search for cowries, count them into my jam jar bank. I poke anemones to make them squirt. My brown freckled arms taste of salt. I don't have a bath for weeks and weeks. Mother believes seawater cleanses even my pigtail, my sandy feet.
Oh, lovely. Yeah, I used to go to Cornwall for holidays as well, but not there. So I resonate with the poking anemones.
I know, as children are so cruel, aren't they? I'm afraid I did awful things to beetles and, what are they called? Well, things that you find under stones.
And limpets. I remember, prizing them off rocks, the poor things. Terrible, really. But we were curious.
We were curious.
That's a lovely poem. But tell us about the title, The Year of Two Winters.
That came from spending some time in New Zealand for 4 years between 2006 and 2010. And I timed coming back to England very badly. So it was winter in New Zealand. And then I came back to actually one of the coldest winters here. I don't know if you remember 2010. It was thick ice. And I was in a rented flat and very cold and rather miserable. So the poem, The Year of Two Winters, is about that.
So and how many collections have there been?
Excuse me, only one actual collection like this, solo collection. But my previous book, Off Cumden's, was with my partner, Bob Hamilton, who's a black and white photographer. So our book was sort of celebrating Yorkshire with his photographs and my poems. And before that, the first publication I had was Heart Murmur, which was a pamphlet published by Calder Valley Poetry. And that was really based on my experience of working as a GP, but also being a patient. So it's got quite a lot of... It's fairly light-hearted, most of it, not all of it, but based a bit on medical experience, both as a doctor and as a patient.
Lovely. Well, Off Cumden's is a really lovely book, and it's a book of black and white photographs, as you say, and your poetry, and I was a bit concerned because it's been in our library and it's not there. Somebody's liked it so much they've nicked it. It will come back. It's a lovely book. But this is also a really interesting book. I took it down to, we did some readings in the Leeds Library during the Light Festival.
Yes, I know.
And I'd read a few poems from it, but we were reading aloud and I read the entirety of your book to people as they passed by. So it was a good job.
Thank you.
So some people stopped to listen and some people moved on. It's rather a lovely occasion.
Yeah.
Do you think, I mean, in terms of themes within the book, anything that now when you look at it emerges from it, or is it more of a miscellany?
I think it's a miscellany. I don't know how to say that word. It's a hodgepodge because it really is a collection of poems I've written, particularly over the last 6 to 7 years when I've been writing poetry much more. And so although it's arranged sort of chronologically, so it goes through from childhood to adulthood, it hasn't actually got a theme. I mean, there are things I recognise that I write a lot about the sea and also uncertainty seems to be a theme. And, of course, family and relationships and parents and sisters and everyday things like that. I think it's got a fair amount of humorous poems. I mean, I think I've got more confident in that. I have thought the poetry world can be very snobby about humorous poetry and see it as second class. And I thought, oh, stuff that. I'm just going to put in what I like writing. So it's a real mix of, you know, much more serious topics and some very light-hearted ones.
Be lovely to hear another poem from it.
Okay, well, maybe I should read The Year of Two Winters, since that is the title of the collection. And as I said, I mean, when I came back, it was a difficult time for me because my marriage had split up. I'd left ex-husband in New Zealand and my children, my twins, had just gone to university. I mean, I basically had about five life events to cope with all at the same time, as well as moving countries and new jobs and lots of things going on. So the year of two winters was black ice treachery. I flew from dark into dark, the flat so cold, my breath left frosted whirls inside the glass each night. It felt like camping with borrowed kit. I looked up at the concrete sky, the red kites tilting on their wings, the colours of suburbia so distant from the southern Alps I'd learned to love, then to leave. I flew between the hemispheres with scarred wings, left behind a scattered nest. I waited for the light to come, to garland me with longer days, with hope that starts in February, snowdrops pushing up and through.
Lovely stuff. Thank you very much, Emma. Emma Storr reading from her collection, The Year of Two Winters. So we're going to hear your first piece of music that you've chosen, which is Jacob Orlinsky, a countertenor. Tell us about this.
I've always wanted to sing much better than I do. And I started having some singing lessons a few years ago with a wonderful teacher and opera singer called Katie Kelly. And actually, I like singing lots of different sorts of music. But the thing that she's teaching me at the moment is an extract from an opera called Il Guistino. And the piece is Vedrò con mio diletto. And she sent me a recording by this chap, Jacob Orlinsky, who's a countertenor, happens to be extremely beautiful too. And he's singing this wonderful song. So I'm learning it, but I wish I could sing it even a fraction, a 1% of what he does.
Oh.
So that was Jacob Orlinski performing Vedrò con mio diletto. I'm going to Italy in a couple of weeks. I might be able to say that better by the time I come back. And we're talking to Emma Stoll, the poet. So, Emma, let's track back a bit. Have you always written? And if so, has it been poetry? You said you were writing more poetry in the last 7 years. Was poetry something you did early on, or was it some other kind of writing, or no writing at all?
No, I have always written poetry and songs, actually. So I think even when I was about four, I was writing things. And I was, this is very embarrassing, but I was known as Storybook Emma when I was at primary school. And I'm sure that's because of my mother and, you know, her influence. Yeah. But I always loved writing stories and I always wrote poetry. And I think because of the era I went to school, we all learnt rhyming poetry and things with a lot of rhythm. And so I wrote a lot of doggerel and poems that rhymed, and that continued when I went to medical school. It was a way of surviving. Medical school was actually writing poems about the people who taught us, or I had a sort of rap version of the Krebs cycle, which is a very complicated biochemical process. And the only way I could remember it was to put it to sort of a rap rhythm, because I couldn't remember the actual science of it, whereas I could hear the music of it.
Given the fact that your mother was a professional writer, I know she did other things too, were you at all tempted to go that way, or did you feel you have to go to medical school? Was it something you wanted to do, or was there pressure either way?
Well, she had actually done an English degree first and then done medicine herself, and then trained as a psychotherapist. So that was a big influence. And I was not good at science at school, so I wanted to do an English degree, actually, but ended up doing something different. I did a social science degree. And then I also did medicine. So I think she was quite a good model for the fact both my parents were very interested in the arts as well as the sciences, and didn't think it was a good idea to separate them, really. So I think that was a huge influence. But at the time I was 18, I never thought of doing medicine at all. I was really not very good at sciences, but I worked very, very hard after the first degree to get into medical school.
Well, you must have done. I mean, yes, and very interesting, though, that they were into arts and sciences together, because that's very rare. We tend to shuffle them off into different places, don't we? Split them off in our heads. But let's talk about your mum, Catherine Stoll. Then, I mean, I never knew her. I don't know anything about her. I said I love the writing, and the book has stayed with me. You know, I've read it about 2 months ago, and I can still see it. That's how I tend to remember books, not detail, plot, but I tend to remember pictures and sort of from a sort of senses point of view. But yes, I mean, yeah, she was. Tell us about her.
Okay. Well, I mean, she was obviously quite talented in lots of different ways, and I think I was very lucky to have her as a mother. She was a wonderful storyteller. She didn't drive, so whenever we went anywhere, it was usually on public transport in London. And a story would sort of keep me from being bored. Well, I'm one of three daughters, I should say, the youngest. But she had sort of serials or stories that she told all of us, and she wrote us all individual books, not always using our names, because she realised that could be embarrassing. But she was very imaginative and very witty, so she was extremely good company. And as I said, she did an English degree first, then she did medicine, and then she worked as a psychotherapist for about 7 years, but she was always writing children's books during that time. And when she became more successful, and Marianne Dreams was probably her best known book, although she's also very well known for Clever Polly and the Stupid Wolf, which is still in print. And then, you know, she wrote over 40 children's books during her life. So she gave up practicing as a doctor when I was about 7, and then she just concentrated on writing.
Wow. And Marianne Dreams was the one that was most successful at the time.
She was very inspired with that. She wrote it in something like 2 weeks.
Yes.
While she was, my parents were away in Greece for a couple of weeks, and I think it was in Crete, and she was very interested in dreams. I mean, partly her psychoanalytic training, but also I think it appealed to her imagination. She loved fairy stories and that sort of genre. So I think, but the dream world and the way it intersects with real life, she was very interested in. And so Marianne Dreams sort of came to her, I think, and she just wrote it very, very quickly. And it came out, I think, the same year as something like Tom's Secret Garden or another very famous children's book. And I think she wondered if she might have won something for Marianne Dreams, but got, displaced by another very, very good children's book
that came out
in the same year.
Yes, that is a good one to lose out on if you're going to lose
absolutely
on a prize. But yes, I mean, very briefly, it's about the relationship between a sort of 11-year-old girl and a similar age boy who never actually meet in real life, but they meet in dreams that she has.
Yes,
not that he has, but she has, and she has the ability through a particular pen to draw things that will then appear in her dreams later on in the day or in the evening or in the night. I mean, it's the most extraordinary idea. Mm. But you were going to read us a bit, if you would, to give us a flavour.
Yes. I mean, Marianne, it is very dated, this book, of course, and Marianne is confined to bed for 6 weeks or longer. Yes. She has to miss school.
Yes.
And she's terribly bored, but she is exploring a box in which she finds a pencil, and that's the magic pencil, really, that helps her, as you said, what she draws in the day, she then dreams about at night, but it gives her a lot of power, which sometimes she misuses, which was interesting. so she's looking for something to do. It never says what was wrong with her, but I know she had rheumatic fever, which in the 50s would have been a more serious condition. It was in her great-grandmother's old polished mahogany workbox, which now belonged to Marianne's mother. It wasn't used as a regular everyday workbox for darning or mending or dressmaking, but was brought out occasionally for Marianne to look at and tidy up, generally when she was ill and tired of her own toys and books and needing some extra amusement. The workbox was charming, and Marianne loved it. It had a tray lined with green satin and fitted with little tools with mother-of-pearl handles for all sorts of elaborate, out-of-date needlework. Little satin-covered boxes with mother-of-pearl knobs on the lids, and a space underneath the tray in which were all sorts of treasures that Marianne's great-grandmother and grandmother and mother had somehow collected. There were buttons of every kind, ivory lace bobbins, mother-of-pearl counters, an odd chessman or two, short lengths of ribbon, buckles, sequins, beads, and among them, this particular time, Marianne found the pencil.
Lovely stuff. And you remember,
I have got a mahogany workbox, which I certainly remember being allowed to play with on special occasions. Whether it actually dates back quite as far back as great-grandma, I'm not sure, but I'm pretty sure my grandmother contributed things. And it's got little miniature toys in it, a little teeny Dutch doll that fits into an egg, and a sewing kit, and but things that would have dated back certainly to the 19th century. if not early part of 20th.
It doesn't strike me as being particularly old-fashioned, you see.
Really?
No, it doesn't. I mean, I think compared to things like, you know, the famous Five, which were being written around the same time, or the Secret Seven, which I loved as a kid, by the way.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's quite a lot in that that maybe doesn't pass muster these days. I don't think it's particularly old-fashioned. There are things that, you know, maybe stick out a bit in terms of the language.
Yes.
But it's a recognisable world. And actually, because of the it all takes place in a kind of other world.
That's true. Yes, that's true. I suppose I'm very conscious reading it that, you know, she calls her mother, which seems very old-fashioned. And also to have a, because Marianne's ill, she has to have a governess who comes and gives her lessons. Now, these days, you'd call it a tutor, wouldn't you?
Is she called a governess?
I think she is, because...
Yeah.
She doesn't want to have one. She said, I can't do lessons when I'm ill.
I suppose, yes. I mean, I think I think if you read it fairly intelligently, you just go, okay, home tutor.
Yes.
Call something different. But yeah, I mean, I don't think it's dated too badly at all. I think it's really interesting novel, and I would recommend anybody to try and find it on one of those secondhand sites because it's fantastic book.
Thank you.
But let's have another piece of music, and then we'll have some more poetry from you. And also, I'd like to know whether your mum, or your mother, sorry, mother, encouraged you with your writing in terms of and saw any of it.
Okay.
But let's hear some music first. And this is by Joan Baez.
Yes.
Tell us about it.
I love Joan Baez. I thought she's very much part of me being a teenager, listening to her, trying to play my guitar and sound like her, which, of course, I never could. But I still have the Joan Baez songbook. I still know an awful lot of the songs. And one of my favourites is Silky.
Man upon the land.
So that was Silky, performed by Joan Baez and chosen by Emma Storr, who's our poet. In Love the Words this afternoon, going to be reading some more from The Year of Two Winters. Yes, do read us another poem, Emma.
Well, I thought I'd better read Selkie, which is another term for
Silky. Oh, I see.
Well, because that sort of myth of the seal people always appealed to me. I know it's more an Orkney and sort of Scandinavian myth, isn't it, about seal people coming to land or sometimes being stolen by humans. Anyway, this is a poem, my poem, Selkie. I think you'll see what it's about. I slip on my sea dress, black and sleek. I don't look back in case a child stirs, a man wakes, or the ocean's call is drowned in wind. I dive through waves that slap the rocks, barnacles crackle in the foam. Fathoms swallow me, sway my body in a lullaby of tides. I'm stroked by kelp's slippery blades. Seals sing, I forget everyone. I leave land for water, salt, for the floating moon.
Lovely stuff, thank you.
So Selkies can never go back into the sea unless they find their seal skins again. Mm. And so I was imagining somebody doing that.
Great stuff, really lovely. And yes, did your mother encourage you? Did she live long? She lived a long time, didn't she?
So oh yes, she died at 87. So,
there you go.
Yes. No, she definitely encouraged me. Yeah. And kept, I think, quite a lot of my sort of early writing. So both my parents were very encouraging about any creative work we did. They were both quite musical too, so, you know, music was a big thing in our house.
Well, we haven't talked about your father, Anthony Storr, whose book I read when I was doing a foundation in humanistic psychotherapy years ago.
Yeah.
I can't even say the words, which is probably one reason why I never went on with it. But it was a sort of classic book, really. Do you want to say something about him?
Yes, I mean, as I said, I think they were both very interested in the combination of arts and sciences. And I know my father had been taught by C.P. Snow at Cambridge, and he was a huge influence. So despite being, you know, being a doctor and a psychotherapist himself, an awful lot in my family, he was always very interested in literature and in music particularly. And so, I mean, quite a lot of his books combine. He wrote several. I can't remember how many books Anthony wrote, but in some of them he is combining the idea of art and science. And, of course, psychotherapy is a sort of practicing art as well as based on scientific background. So the dynamics of creation is very much about his book, about, you know, creativity and how it links to brain function and psychology.
I'd like to read that book. Have you got a particular title for one there?
The Dynamics of Creation is
I'll get it off you afterwards.
Yes.
But yes, I recommend the book. He's a really interesting writer. But yes, I mean, were you tempted to go into psychotherapy yourself?
Yes. I mean, I could easily have become a psychiatrist, but I thought, because my elder sister is one as well, I thought three in the family was probably enough. And also, actually, being a GP, there's so much, you know, psychology involved that I felt I wanted the more variety of being a GP, which I really enjoyed. I'm no longer practicing now.
And talking about poetry, are you working on other things, new things?
I haven't got a collection sort of planned. I'm still writing, often because I go to quite a lot of poetry groups and workshops and courses. I'm always writing new stuff, but I haven't got enough for another collection at the moment. However, I've rather rashly volunteered myself as a creative writing tutor on a cruise in the Hebrides in the summer, or no, the autumn. So I'm going to be, you know, helping other people write, which I think will be great fun.
That's like a good job.
Yes, I know. and I'm giving a couple of readings at a medical humanities conference, or the Hippocrates Poetry and Medicine Symposium in Spain. So there's lots on the horizon that's good to look forward to.
There have been other GP poets, of course, haven't there?
There have.
Wallace Stevens? Was it Wallace Stevens or William Carlos Williams, wasn't it?
William Carlos Williams was certainly a doctor, and there's a wonderful New Zealand poet called Glenn Colquhoun, who wrote a very good book called Playing God, which came out in about 2002. But I used that frequently for teaching medical students at the University of Leeds, because he's very witty, but he's also very insightful about that relationship between doctor and patient, particularly in the GP setting.
Fascinating to know. Well, again, that's another. You're going to have to stay back for 5 minutes afterwards, and I'll get all these titles.
A big reading list.
Yeah,
yes.
Reading list from you.
I'm sure you could recommend some for me too.
Well, I probably could, but not off the cuff. Let's hear another poem, and then another piece of music, and then we might have to bid you adieu.
I quite like writing about the body. Partly my medical training, and sometimes things rhyme. Actually, this one doesn't, but this is Ode to the Pancreas, because I feel it's an organ that's very undervalued. I'm grateful for the work you do without fuss or instruction, my quiet organ of small waterfalls dripping juices onto food I've gulped, unthinking. Those fatty globules floating down my underground stream, breaking up, breaking down when they meet your fluid weapons, amylase and esterase, phospholipase. Please don't surprise me at the end. Don't make me swell or turn a greenish yellow, and I'll try not to poison you with chocolate, booze or caffeine, my hidden unsung gland.
Well, that must be one of the first, or perhaps the only poem written to the pancreas.
I just think it's so fascinating how all this is going on inside of us, yeah. And you're totally, you mentioned your rumbling stomach, so one is conscious sometimes of things going on, of course, but a lot of the time it's all happening automatically and you don't have to think about it. It's so clever.
It is very clever, extraordinary, isn't it, actually? Until it goes wrong, of course, and then we go, hang on a minute, it's not working, how dare it?
Exactly, yes, you feel betrayed.
Yes, I think we should be more grateful to our bodies, generally speaking, shouldn't we? Mm-hmm. It's been really fascinating to talk to you, Emma, and thanks ever so much. And also talking about your parents. And first of all, before I recommend Catherine's book again, tell us where we can get a hold of The Year of Two Winters, and in fact, the Ofcumpton's book as well.
Yes, so I was very lucky and won the Jeff Stevens Memorial Poetry Prize in 2022, which is run every year by Indigo Dreams. So The Year of Two Winters comes from Indigo Dreams Publishing, if you look that up. And Ofcumpton's was published by Fairacre Press. So again, it should be on their website.
Fantastic. And the copy I've got of Marianne Dreams is published by Puffin, but it's probably, it's a very long. The price is £5.99, which will probably put us back a few years. But if you go to one of those second-hand sites, I'm sure you'll get it.
Yes, I should know if it's in print, but I rather doubt it is now.
Well, it should be.
Thank you.
The final piece of music, tell us about that.
Can I remember what I chose?
You can. It begins with B. She does. Beyonce.
Oh, yes. I just happened to be listening to the radio and some. I think it was that wonderful programme Playlist, and they played Beyonce's Texas Hold'em track, and I thought, oh, this is wonderful. I really love country music often, and I don't know Beyonce that well, so I thought, why not go for that?
Great. Well, thank you, Emma. And we're going to hear finally on Love the Words this afternoon. And thank you for Elliot being on the desk as ever.
Thank you so much.
This ain't Texas. Alexis, and throw your keys up.
Hey.
Stick around, round, 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 round.
Stick around.
And I'll be damned if I can't slow dance with you. Ooh. Come pour some sugar on me, honey, too. It's a real live boogie and a real live hold down. Don't be a bitch, come take it to the floor now.
Ooh.
There's a tornado,
tornado
in my city.
In
the basement.
Basement.
That shit ain't pretty.
Rugged
with.
Surviving.
A red cup kisses, sweet redemption, passing time, yeah. Ooh, one step to the right. We headed to the dive bar we always thought was nice. Ooh, run me to the left, then spin me in the middle, boy, I can't read your mind.
This ain't Texas, ain't no hold'em.
Take it to the floor.
I'll be damned if I cannot dance with you. Come pour some liquor on me, honey, too. It's a real live boogie and a real live hold down. Don't be a bitch, come take it to the floor now.
Shoot.
love the poems, love the stories, love the words on East Leeds Community Radio.